This is Nachum Sefer Melachim Aleph, chapter 18. Hashem instructs Eliyahu to appear before Ahav and tell the king that he will soon bring rain to Israel to end the three-year drought. In the meantime, Ahav and Ovadyahu, or Ovadya, the manager of his household, are foraging through Shomron in search of any remaining pasture that might save the surviving horses and mules who have been starving. Ovadya is a deeply God-fearing man. Although Izebel, wife of Ahav, conducted fierce persecution and massacre of the prophets of Hashem, possibly in retaliation for the drought that was decreed by Eliyahu, Ovadya took the initiative to hide and support 100 of them in two caves, 50 in each cave, where he secretly provided them with bread and water. Eliyahu encounters Ovadya and tells him to inform his master Ahav that the prophet is present and ready to meet him. Ovadya is hesitant to comply with Eliyahu's command. Ahav has been searching across the world for Eliyahu for 3 years. And if Ovadya claims to have found him, and then Eliyahu disappears somewhere, Ovadya fears being punished severely for the false alarm. Eliyahu swears in the name of Hashem that he will indeed meet Ahav, which reassures Ovadya. Ahav arrives to see Eliyahu and derisively calls him Troubler of Israel, Ocher Yisrael. Eliyahu responds that it is in fact Ahav and his household, with their abandonment of Hashem and embrace of idolatry, who have brought suffering upon the nation, and not him. Eliyahu proposes a showdown with the prophets of Baal. He tells Ahav to call upon the prophets of Baal and Asherah and have them stand together at Mount Carmel. Ahav complies with Eliyahu's request, and the prophets are assembled together. Eliyahu acknowledges that he's the only remaining prophet of Hashem, facing now 450 prophets of Baal. He confronts the people on their hypocrisy. He says if they believe in Hashem, they should reject the Baal, and if they believe in the Baal, they should quit pretending to serve Hashem. Eliyahu outlines a contest to determine which deity is the true God. Each side in the dispute will select a bull and prepare an offering. They'll then call upon their respective gods. Whichever one responds with a miraculous fire to consume the offering will be declared the true God. The Baal prophets agree to this arrangement, and Eliyahu allows them to go first since they are the larger group. The prophets of Baal arrange their bull offering on an altar and begin calling out to Baal, dancing upon the altar, jumping on it. By the afternoon, there's still been no response. Eliyahu starts mocking them. He says maybe Baal is distracted, traveling, having a conversation, maybe sleeping. The prophets of the Baal become desperate, and they start mutilating themselves, cutting themselves until blood gushes forth, but there's no answer, and eventually the prophets of Baal give up. Eliyahu then summons the assembled audience to draw closer to him. He proceeds to construct an altar to Hashem made out of 12 stones corresponding to the 12 tribes of Israel. He digs a trench around the altar and fills it with water. Eliyahu then lays wood and the butchered meat of his offering on top of the altar, and he tells the people to douse the offering with water. They pour 4 pitchers of water on it 3 times, again for a total of 12. Eliyahu beseeches Hashem to answer his prayer and demonstrate that he is the true God and that Eliyahu is his faithful servant. A miraculous fire descends from heaven to consume the sacrifice, burn the wood, and evaporate the water inside the trenches. The people are inspired to proclaim that Hashem is the only true God. Eliyahu takes advantage of this enthusiasm and momentum, and he directs the Jews to seize all of the prophets of Baal, who have now been revealed as charlatans. Eliyahu kills all of the false prophets by the brook of Kishon. Eliyahu then tells Ahav to go and eat and drink, because a rainstorm is coming soon. Eliyahu ascends to Mount Carmel and waits with his face between his knees. He asks his servant to look out on the horizon to see if he spots any rain clouds. After 7 times of checking, finally, the tiny cloud is seen rising up from the sea. Eliyahu instructs his servant to urge Ahav to rush home to his palace before the heavy rainfall arrives, which will deter him. Soon after, the sky blackens with cloud cover and an intense rainstorm follows. Eliyahu himself runs before the chariot of Ahav in a gesture of respect for the seemingly newly repentant king. There are a couple of interesting ideas to reflect upon in this chapter. First, although Hashem informs Eliyahu that he plans to put an end to the drought and the famine, Eliyahu still goes with the assumption that some change must occur in the nation to justify this. Apparently, he interprets Hashem's command that he engage with Ahav not just as a command to tell him what's going to happen, but as a command to teach or inspire the king in some way, to make him worthy of receiving the blessing of rainfall. Change in our fate doesn't happen because of a shift in Hashem's perspective. After all, it happens because of a change in our own attitudes and values and behavior, and that's what Eliyahu is attempting to orchestrate here. The fact that Eliyahu encounters and speaks with Ovadya before speaking with Ahav is fascinating in its own right, and their dialogue is a long one, and it's quite instructive. While Ovadya refers to Eliyahu as his master and draws attention to his God-fearing behavior and saving the prophets of Hashem, when Eliyahu responds, he refers to Ahav as the master of Ovadya. He says, "Your master," referring to Ahav. In some ways, Ovadia represents the nation of Israel, torn between the spiritual authority of the true prophets on one hand and the temporal power of the corrupt monarchy on the other. Ovadia claims allegiance to Eliyahu and belief in his message, and he has indeed protected the prophets of Hashem, yet he is employed by Ahab and subservient to him. The conflict experienced by Ovadia no doubt afflicted many of the Jews who wanted to maintain a level of connection to Judaism and Torah while benefiting from a stability and security that was provided for them by the regime of Ahab that was unfortunately steeped in idolatry. Eliyahu identifies this somewhat hypocritical stance in Ovadia, but is even more strident when he confronts the Jews who have gathered to witness the spectacle at Mount Carmel. He castigates the assembled Israelites for their self-contradiction and inconsistency in worshipping both Hashem and the Baal. In a statement that sounds almost blasphemous, Eliyahu suggests that if they truly believe Baal is God, they should abandon the service of Hashem altogether and follow the Baal exclusively. The question is, why does Eliyahu endorse such an extreme and exclusive position? Isn't it better to worship both Hashem and the Baal than not to worship Hashem at all? Upon reflection, though, we can appreciate Eliyahu's point here, and it fits perfectly with his generally uncompromising worldview. An individual who takes a definite position on something can be argued with and proven wrong. He or she is engaged in the search for truth, seeks explanations that make sense, and will discard those that are irreconcilable with the facts. On the other hand, a person who is comfortable living in a state of self-contradiction and inconsistency is much more difficult to debate or to educate. Since they haven't subscribed to a single clear opinion on the issue at hand, anything goes. And since their position is constantly shifting back and forth, in the words of Eliyahu, hopping between two sides of the fence, so to speak, they are immune to argument or disproof. Like slick politicians who resist the temptation to commit to any one principle, they can easily avoid the pain of losing an argument by changing their views as needed. The whole point of Eliyahu's demonstration at Mount Carmel is his demand that the Jewish people stop equivocating and agree to abide by one absolute truth. This way, the proof he provides of Hashem's existence will automatically necessitate the rejection of all other objects of worship.